Well, it's really important to realize that years ago, kids, when they got out of high school or college, moved to where the jobs are. That trend has reversed itself. Today, the big companies, the corporations, they move to where the young minds are, the young people of the next generation. And so the damage that's been done to our state, because we have the largest out-migration of high school and college kids of almost any state, I guess, with the exception of New Jersey, is in fact a generational event. It's crushing our ability to compete for new jobs and businesses that want to be around our young people. And the towns that are home to the great public colleges and many of the privates have irreversible damage because of the loss of the great staff on those universities. ISU here has lost 120 slots. They just don't hire. It's not like they fire people and there's a big event, we're all aware of it. It's just a death by a thousand cuts, and that's what's happening. The impact on social services is equally dark, and it's really forced people with any kind of disability in their family to move out of state. And I think that's not unintended.
Unintended? How do you mean?
Well, I think we have to be conscious that in the city of Chicago, the city is becoming smaller and whiter. And we've pushed a lot of people out of the city. The same thing, which in a city they might call gentrification, is happening across the state. Our state became smaller last year, but it also became 10% richer on a per capita basis. It's not because we all made more money, it's because we pushed the poor and the sick out of our state because, well, they needed to go someplace where they could have access to the social services that we in Illinois were once so proud to provide.
Who intended this?
I think Governor Rauner has really low regard for people who are sick or disabled or suffer from mental illness. I think he sees those things as self-inflicted wounds or a sign of weakness. He doesn't see a role for government in helping people to live as full a life as God intended them to live. And instead, he thinks they should be cast aside and pushed to other states. That's what I believe.
Such damage is not reversible quickly. What are first steps in your view?
Well, I'm very hopeful. To tell you the truth, as bad as Governor Rauner is to our great universities, our surrounding states are equally aggressive in defunding the universities, attacking tenure, and pushing an anti-intellectual agenda. That's good news for us because we're in a great position to attract to Illinois the great professors and researchers from places like Iowa and Wisconsin and Indiana and bring them here. Bring them here with their research portfolios, the source of the new economy. By that I mean the professors have research and basic research, but that basic research almost always sloughs off applied research, which is a business idea that people can invest in and start small companies and who employ people that pay taxes that fund local schools and educate a whole new generation ready to begin that virtuous cycle again and again. MIT alumni alone have founded over 30,000 companies, and we want that for our state, that dynamic. We need to support our colleges and universities so that we too can have a growing economy that attracts kids from all over the world.
You advocate a progressive income tax that would require a state constitutional amendment designed to be difficult. How would you accomplish that?
I think there's a lot of support now. The pain and suffering that people have witnessed either directly or through the stories and tales they hear from friends and family members, I think have created a ripe environment to support a constitutional change. I think that people are willing to sacrifice, and they also recognize that when we look around the country at the great economic models of states that are thriving and flourishing, those states have done what we need to do. If we want great outcomes, if we want to be California, we want to be Minnesota, if we want to be Massachusetts, then we need to have a progressive income tax. Otherwise, we're going to be on the road to places like Kansas or Mississippi.
Illinois is traditionally a high property tax, low income tax state. you're advocating a change in that ratio. How do you get that done?
Well, I think that most people recognize that if we want great outcomes for our economy, if we want to keep our children close to homes, if we want to see a future of our state that attracts and retains the minds of our great young people, that things need to change. We need to invest in education. And I think most people believe that the government can invest in the economy that it's part of, but also the people who are part of that economy. To do that, we need to invest in education, K through 8, and then higher ed. We have some of the worst outcomes in the state, in the United States, for our high school kids.
What's the political calculus necessary to get the coalition to get it done, though? For generations, it's been the collar counties won't go for anything different in property taxes because they can fund their schools and still keep a reasonable rate. And downstate doesn't go for it because the ratios aren't favorable. How do you assemble the coalition needed to do it?
I think the answer lies in computational data, big data, and access to information. 5, 10, 20, 30 years ago, an ordinary citizen couldn't figure out what was going on with the property tax appeals racket in our state. Today, because of access to big data, to the ability to create giant spreadsheets to compare the information ourselves, we can all be witnesses, we can all be experts, we can all understand what they told us was unknowable, how these home values are calculated. Now we know with great certainty that the system is a fraud, that it's corrupt, that the outcome of your assessment has less to do with the construction of your home than your access to a great lawyer or whether or not you've made financial contributions to the assessor, his campaign or hers, or their political party.
That's certainly an issue that's alive and hot in Chicago. It's less common for such revenue to come to lawyers who are party-connected officials in downstate Illinois. Why should downstate care about this particular plank of yours?
Because there's no rule of law in the assessment process in any county. No county does a great job. And anyone can prove this out. It's not like you need to take the word of an expert. You can go on sites like Zillow and others that reveal the last 25 or 30 houses sold in your county. You can then compare that sales price to the local assessor's website for the assessed valuation. And without a doubt, I believe you will reveal to yourself and to others the fact that the most expensive houses are always undervalued and the least expensive houses are almost always overvalued. So the system is stacked against the middle class and the poor.
Unpack your fix, would you?
I think there are a series of reforms that need to occur right away. I don't think that an elected official should be in that business. I don't think an elected official should have conflicts of interest. I don't think that that's good government or good governance, and many other places have banned such behavior. We ban it at the federal level. So I don't think a state rep or state senator should be allowed to be in the property tax appeals business. I think the party chair of whatever party shouldn't be an elected official, because then we free each other, we free ourselves to have honest opinions about what is in fact going on.
Even if an assessor, though, is not an elected official, they're still appointed and they serve in a unit of government that is supported by property taxes. Isn't that an innate conflict? How would you address that?
Well, I don't think that conflict is nearly as challenging as the one in which local officials, let's say aldermen, city councilmen, state reps, state senators, fear retribution from a party leader who also acts as an assessor. And makes it nearly impossible for other elected officials to speak out, to be critical of a system, and to act as fiduciaries on behalf of the public. That isn't happening now in our city, in our state. And I think if we can create a system in which we get rid of those conflicts, then the electeds will be much freer to give us a great system, much more likely to embrace a paying for our schools at the state level than through local property taxes.
Some people in the political mainstream in this community on both sides of the aisle have begun talking about, well, lawmakers are not doing their job in Springfield. Most of them own businesses. We should not patronize those businesses because they have not done their job for us. State Representative Dan Brady, Republican in House leadership, represents this area. He thinks that's unfair and ignores the constituent service operation. Do you think it's unfair?
I mean, I would do that on a case-by-case basis. Actually, creating a movement around boycotting every business associated with a state legislator, irrespective of whether or not they've been trying, whether they've been working hard, whether they're free of conflicts, I think is arbitrary, and it's as arbitrary as the property tax system that we have now. And I wouldn't trade a second wrong for the wrong we already have.
There are some union and party leaders who are gravitating to your primary opponent, J.B. Pritzker, because he's a self-funder, which would free up money that in the existing state party coffers to serve legislative races. That is a callous thing, but it is a practical thing. What is your counter to that argument?
I don't think that they're attracted to J.B. Pritzker. I think they're being pushed there by another force. It's not his magnetism. There's positive and negative attraction associated with any magnetic field, and I think if you want to use that analogy, I would say that there are other actors using negative energy to push people towards an endorsement of Pritzker. The fact is he remains untested, unknown, unvetted, and we should not go into a general election with a candidate who we don't understand. When a guy's two political heroes are people like Larry Dominick from Cicero and Rod Blagojevich, I think we should take pause to make sure we fully understand the nature of his morality and the sort of government he wants. When you're calling Blagojevich to cut a deal and you're using language like, I hear ya, I think it's an indicator that he's willing to go on and preserve the status quo, a status quo that's destroying the future of our state, wrecking the opportunity for the next generation, and pushing those kids to live elsewhere.
And finally, make your case to voters why you're a better candidate than the other candidates on the Democratic side right now, Senator Biss, Alderman Pawar.
Well, I'd say this. People ought to feel like they know me, that they know my history, in Chicago and the environment that I grew up in that formed my view of government. I believe government's an agent of change, that it can be an ally, that it can help educate our children, keep our communities safe, and invest in the economy that we're all part of. I have a view of vision for the future to restore the economy by using the great attributes the state already has, its public university system, its amazing tourism assets, the fact that it's the transportation center of the United States, and combine those into a winning economic movement that allows our kids to find good jobs and great careers. And I don't know that any of the other candidates have ever created a job, employed people, built things, and I think that's important.